Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for being here. Brian Kilmeade Show on this day. It's everyone knows the number one story is the plane crash that happened last night. An American Airlines jet, regional jet, had a crash with a Black Hawk helicopter from Fort Belvoir, right over in Maryland. Sadly, all 60 died, and the American airline, they've gotten 27 bodies and three. Only one have come from the Black Hawk. There was three overall. It was a normal training mission. They weren't on a mission. They were training experienced pilots all around. Lack of communication could be the key. We don't know a lot, but we have already heard from Sean Duffy, the brand new transportation secretary, about to get a tape statement from Pete Hegseth, the brand new secretary of defense. Currently, there's a press conference in Kansas where this flight initiated from, and it came from Wichita, right off the U.S. Figure Skating Championships. And then for the elite skaters, they stayed an extra couple of days until the 28th and then flew out. And sadly, they lost their lives, including two Russian figure skaters. So the figure skating community has been devastated. Kansas, this is a relatively new route. It's only about a year old. It goes from Wichita over to Reagan. So we'll keep you updated on that. We have this hour going to be joined by Walter Isaacson. Walter Isaacson is the biographer of Elon Musk. The role he's playing already, I was a little stunned by it. I thought he was going to be evaluating, discussing, and then trying to get implementation. I didn't know they were implementing already. Walter Isaacson on Elon Musk, the most famous and possibly the most famous and impactful person in the world, no matter what you think of him. Joining us now is Congressman Jason Smith from Ways and Means, and we have a lot to discuss. First off, Congressman, this has really rocked the country, but really rocked the nation's capital, right?
Brian, it's absolutely heartbreaking. We feel so much for the families of these victims and the first responders. It hits really close to home. That flight path that the plane was coming in from Wichita, I'm from Missouri. I do that twice a week. Every member of Congress does that multiple times a week. Anyone who's visiting the United States Capitol, that's how they fly in. And we haven't seen a tragic accident like this in 40 years. It's really, really heartbreaking.
And brand new cabinet secretaries in place, a brand new team that, you know, the administration's, 2 weeks old? So everyone's got to hit the ground running. Good thing you do have experienced people. Mike Waltz was on to talk about a myriad of things, but he quickly switched to this. Here's what he told us an hour ago on Fox and Friends, Cut 9.
This was a routine training flight. As you know, a Black Hawk typically has two pilots. In this case, it was, and I can tell you, it was an officer and a warrant officer. They tend to have a lot of experience. And then you have an enlisted crew chief in the back. So we'll let the investigation unfold as what happened.
So we'll have to see. I mean, the people are going to find out what the tower was telling you. You know, they asked him 30 seconds before the crash. They said asked the helicopter, can you see the plane? They said yes. But the question was, were they looking at the right plane?
You know, we have a lot to learn from the investigation. Of course, we as Americans expect results and information immediately, but it's going to take some time because it appears from what we've seen, both were doing the normal flight patterns like that they should. It's just this is such a rare situation, and we need to figure out exactly what happened,
right,
why it happened. We can't have this happen again.
So on something of lesser importance, but in talking about running the government, Congressman, as we talk about saving, we talk about freezing hiring. We talk about an offer to 2.3 million federal workers. You could stay home, get 6 months' pay, but just say you're going to resign. This is something that came from DOGE. I found out they're also revamping and interviewing people on the U.S. digital side. If you want to balance the budget, and we're going to do these taxes on tips cuts, no taxes on tips and Social Security, these are the types of cuts that have to happen on spending. Are they related?
The fiscal house of the country is absolutely related because we're at a $1.8 to $2 trillion spending deficit on average just yearly. And that means that we're spending virtually $7 trillion and the revenues are only coming in $5 trillion. We have to cut the spending. If you compare spending to GDP over the last 5 years, Brian, it averages 26%. The 20 years before that, it averaged 20% of GDP. And then revenues that come into the United States averages 17% of GDP. So we have to look at the entire fiscal health of the nation. But every American should be upset to see that only 6% of the federal employee workforce is actually showing up to work. That's ridiculous. Like, I am so proud of President Trump and DOGE for pushing this out. I mean, the prior administration, they just emboldened this process. And I'll tell you, wonder why there's more than a million claims with the Social Security office that are backdated. More than a million cases. It's because less than 10% of their employees are actually working.
It's crazy. And we don't, you know, and we're just assuming that they're getting stuff done while they're at home. So now they're saying that don't fall for it. I was shocked to see that DOGE is working so effectively. According to The Washington Post, Elon Musk has put together a lot of his guys from the private sector, had them go in, lace together the 2.3 million people, put them on an email for the first time ever, made this offer. He brought his HR guy team from SpaceX and made this offer. He's also sitting down with the digital team, renamed it U.S. DOGE instead of U.S. Digital Services. And he's making them explain to his guys, think about this, the best of the best, what they do and how they do it and really justify their job. Because this is the type of thing that has to happen. We have to have that private sector responsibility and accountability in government. I did not know they were making these types of moves.
This just goes to show how great of a leader President Trump is, Brian. He was a visionary to see that he needed to create this new government efficiency committee, and he chose to put Elon Musk, a very successful businessman who, when you look at some of his early emails when he purchased Twitter – or X now, it's virtually the same thing that he's doing with the federal government. And it worked there. It absolutely worked there. They reduced the size of Twitter, made it more efficient and more profitable. That's what we have to do with the American taxpayer dollars. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure that we stretch every dollar to the fullest and most efficient way. And I am so excited about that. Look at the entire cabinet that President Trump has put in place. Whether it's Pete Hegseth, whether it's Sean Duffy, Kristi Noem, these are people that are reformers. They're dedicated to public service, and they are not afraid to make tough decisions to deliver for the American taxpayer.
Right. So not everybody's as excited as you. Here's Chuck Schumer, Cut 29.
We saw what happens when Americans fight back against disastrous policies. Americans made their voices heard. Donald Trump rescinded the OMB order. Now he should rescind the nomination of Russell Vogt. When the Trump administration announced this awful directive on Monday night, we knew immediately it was short-sighted, disastrous, cruel, and dumb.
So he was referring to the freeze on spending programs outside people that weren't affected directly and outside Social Security and Medicare. That was not the most, it was not the clearest directive he's given. I get it. But Russell Vogt is not on the job yet. The problem is he's not on the job. Does Chuck Schumer know what an idiotic statement that was?
I don't know if he does or not, Brian, but Chuck Schumer and the Senate Democrats need to stop stalling the president's confirmation. Russ Vogt needs to be on the job. He's not on the job, and it's because of the Democrat tactics in slowing things down. Do you know when President Obama was sworn in, he had like 6 or 7 of his cabinet officials confirmed on the first day. On the first day. We got one, Marco Rubio. And then it took a long time for Pete Hegseth, and it's been taking a long time for everyone else. We don't even have 7 yet. And so this is because of the Democrats pulling out all stops that they can to stall time, hit every emergency budget they can. But I would tell Leader Schumer that the American people spoke loud and clear of what policies they support and what policies they don't support. And I'll tell you what they said that they don't support. They don't support DEI in government. And that's, in fact, why the president froze the funding, is to make sure there wasn't money going into DEI. And he also froze the money to make sure that they're abiding by the law and making sure that the Hatch Act is not violated, and allowing funding to go to abortion.
Yeah, today is going to be a big day. Our RFK round two is going to start at 10 o'clock. Then we have Kash Patel starts at 9:30 Eastern time. That's 15 minutes. And then Tulsi Gabbard is going to be starting today. And they're going to try to knock her off. They want to be able to knock off one. Not so much for any other reason to say that they're off the mat and ready to react. But so far, between the executive actions and executive orders, so 350 plus. The other thing, Jason Smith, that I think is important is what they're doing at the border. The numbers are stunning. I expected Trump to move quick, but nobody expected the Laken Riley Act to pass. And nobody expected yesterday at the Rio Grande crossing, there was 60 people that came across. And when on Biden's last day, there was as many as 4,000. I mean, 60 people. The word's out. America is closed.
The word is out that President Trump is following through what he says he's going to do, whether it's the border policy or whether it's what happened with Colombia in just the last couple of days where they refused their own citizen, criminals. Right. And when the president was like, if you're not going to work with us, you're not an ally and a friend, and virtually you don't have a free trade agreement, I'm going to put a 25% tariff on everything. And guess what? They backtracked immediately. And that's what all these cartels are seeing. The president declared the cartels as terrorists. They know that he's not messing around. They know that he declared the southern border as an emergency disaster area. I mean, these are things. He said he was going to reinstate, remain in Mexico. He said he was going to end catch and release. He did all that on day one. And we've been begging and asking the administration to do that because we knew that this would stop the flow of illegals crossing the southern border.
Right. So, Congressman, let's talk about the reality of what you're going to do in terms of the first big bill. You want one. Senate wants two. We've been discussing this back and forth. But the key is going to be Chip Roy and Tom Massey. Did they get the message at Doral over this week when the president met with you guys?
You would have to ask them, Brian, but the key is not Chip Roy and Thomas Massey. The key is 218 Republicans in the House of Representatives, because one person could kill the bill. It's not just those two. One person can do it. And what they need to remember is that the only reason Republicans control the House of Representatives, the only reason Republicans control the Senate, and the only reason why Donald Trump is in the White House is because of Donald Trump and the policies that he campaigned on. Some of the discussion that you hear and debates, those were decided in the election when 77 million people said, these are the policies that I support. These are the policies that I want implemented. The House has to stick together. The Senate has to stick together. And we have to deliver as soon as possible what the president campaigned on when it comes to the border, when it comes to economic policies, when it comes to energy policies. But unfortunately, what you see in Washington, Brian, is some people like to go after their own special projects, which people do not, real Americans absolutely despise and hate. And so they're holding things up for X, Y, and Z.
So a couple of things. So for example, I agree, you know, Tom Massey's an eclectic guy, very smart, but he has no sense of team. And he also is not a Trump fan. He's a DeSantis fan. Number two, Chip Roy, I really think his objective is pure. He wants the spending under control. If you promise with him, I promise you we're going to do regular order and go through committees, which you should be doing anyway. Does that get the debt ceiling raised? Because you understand we can't have the government shut down. And does that get him on board for the tax reform renewal, along with the additional tax cuts the president wants?
You know, Brian, I have faith in both of my colleagues, Chip Roy and Thomas Massey, that they will do what's right for the American people and that we will all work to get to a solution. I tell everyone we have to thread a needle with this conference. Everyone's going to have to give and take. Jason Smith's not going to get everything that he wants. Speaker Johnson's definitely not going to get much of what he wants. And Chip Roy is not going to get everything he wants. We have to work together for the good of the American people. And I believe Thomas Massie will. I believe Chip Roy will. They're good people. They want to serve their constituents. Mm-hmm. We may disagree on substance on some issues. That's the thing with the Republican Party, is that we're all independent. We're not like a bunch of sheep that just follows their one leader over the cliff.
So
like
let me have you. So break out your calculator for a second. If you're going to do the tax reform renewal and get it to the Senate, what are you going to do for revenue if you're going to put salt tax back, then make it deductible again, as well as no tax on tips and Social Security?
You know, there's not going to be an unlimited salt cap. That's just it's something that just can't pass. We have to find what is a reasonable salt cap, and we have to pay for it. We absolutely have to pay for it, and there's several ways that we can do it.
All right, I'll have to hold it there. Congressman, sadly, I have to go to break. I went a little long with you. Chairman of House Ways and Means, Jason, we're going to talk to you again about how you plan on doing it. Of course, the number one story is the chopper plane crash last night in Washington, D.C. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey there, Ryan Reynolds here. It's a new year, and you know what that means. No, not the diet. Resolutions. A way for us all to try and do a little bit better than we did last year. And my resolution, unlike Big Wireless, is to not be a raging and raise the price of wireless on you every chance I get. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited. See mintmobile.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever find yourself playing the budgeting game? Well, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive, you can find options that fit your budget and potentially lower your bills. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Not available in all states.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The helicopter was in a standard pattern. If you live in the D.C. area, you'll see helicopters up and down the river. This flight pattern is seen oftentimes when you live in D.C. This was a standard flight pattern last night as well. The American Airlines flight coming into land was in a standard flight pattern as it was coming into DCA. This was not unusual with a military aircraft flying the river and aircraft landing at DCA. And again, if you live in the area, you'll see that frequently.
So the president put out on Truth Social that all this was a tragedy and it was avoidable. So Sean Duffy had to ask, you know, right away, do you believe it was avoidable? He went back to the microphone. The very last thing he said is this whole incident was indeed avoidable, which makes sense because you'd have crashes every day if you think, well, that's what happens when you have a chopper in a plane. No, it almost never happens. It's been over 13 years since anything like this has happened. And maybe it's the tower, maybe it's the airline, but it looks like the airline, you know, it's like turning around an elephant. You're not going to be able to move it quickly. And the chopper looks like the one that seems to have rammed into it, whether they're getting bad information or bad visuals. They do know... Optimum is four people, one looking out each side with the chopper. They had three. Is that an incident? If someone looking out the other side, would they have seen the American jet? I'm not sure. When we come back, we change gears. Walter Isaacson, one of America's finest biographers, did a great book on Elon Musk. He's one of the most famous, most controversial people in the world and maybe the most brilliant. He'll be joining us to talk about his role with this administration, how long they think it'll last, the controversy he's stirring overseas, and so much more. Brian Kilmeade.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we're back. Of course, we're following all the tragedy and trying to get some answers on the plane crash, the crash with the Blackhawk last night about 9 o'clock Eastern time. It's really paralyzed Washington, D.C. until 11 o'clock. One of the busiest airport in the country, perhaps, is locked down till 11. They're trying to figure things out. They've picked out, when I started this show, coming off Fox and Friends, 27 bodies, but there was 60 on the American Airlines jet. There were three on the Black Hawk during a training mission. We'll keep you up to date on what's happening. And we'll also, and we'll break in. So far, 67 feared dead. Let's bring in maybe the country's number one biographer. Certainly what he's done has been nothing short of prolific. His latest project was following around and making sense of one of the most fascinating people of his generation, the Benjamin Franklin of this generation, so to speak, Elon Musk. He teaches at Tulane. I've got a family member there right now. And Walter Isaacson joins us. Walter, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, Brian, thank you. And I can't wait to meet your family member at Tulane.
Oh,
got
yes.
To go down and teach my class now.
Yeah, he's in the last year of law school there, and I'll be coming down for it. May hopefully maybe meet by the Super Bowl. But
I'll see you at the Super Bowl.
Absolutely. So, yeah. So Walter, I love Steve Jobs, and it gave me such a confidence on and knowing that he was alive and commissioned you to write a tough book on him in real time. And he said, be as tough and just be as fair. That's all he wanted. And then you take on an equally fascinating person with Elon Musk. First off, how did you get him to agree before we talk about what he's doing now?
It was really interesting, Brian. I talked to him, and he said he wanted to do it. So we had an hour-long talk on the phone. I said, here's the deal. I don't want to do this based on 10 or 20 interviews. I want to do this based on 2 years of being by your side whenever I want. Living in an Airstream trailer next to your house, morning, noon, and night. And he went, okay. And then I said, but here's the other part of the deal. I want this to be a fair book, and I don't want you to read it in advance or have any control over it. And he went, okay. And I was kind of surprised. And then I went talking to friends about half hour later. They said, we didn't know you were writing a book on Elon Musk. I said, what do you mean? He said, he just tweeted out, Walter's writing my biography. So that's how we got going.
Wow. And then you did. And talk about how your relationship evolved. How did you get his trust? And what was it like over those 2 years before we get into what he's doing now with Trump and Germany and everything?
I sat by his side and just watched. I mean, you've seen American journalists these days. There are very few that try to do what I did, which is just sit by somebody, get it exactly right, take notes. And I always stayed in the background a little bit, but there was no meeting he ever kicked me out of. And after every meeting, he would sit and talk and reflect and explain what had happened. And the book, I think, is, you know, and he, I think he feels that way, too, is warts and all, but it's right on fair. I just try to tell you the story. I'm a New Orleans guy. And so I'm not there to preach at you. I'm there to say, hey, this is a really interesting story. Watch him, how he does the Raptor engine. Watch how he does the full self-driving. Watch how he goes into Twitter and changes it. And then you make your own decisions.
You thought you had a great book, and then he gets involved with Twitter. And I'm thinking to myself, this probably just extended the whole journey for another, 6 months? As he does one of the most fascinating things? I mean, what was that like? Do you think you had done it, and all of a sudden your book just got even better and more exciting?
So in late 2022, I'm with him, and he's just become the richest person on earth, person of the year at Time and other places. And I said, well, you must be satisfied. You know, you've hit all your marks. And he said, no, whenever I play a video game, I can never be satisfied at the level I'm at. I've got to move to the next level. I don't like calm. I don't like success. I like drama. I like challenge. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I'm secretly buying. I'm buying up shares of Twitter. And that, in some ways, helped bring the book all around because it gave you the political and personal aspects of him, an emotional aspect, which you don't have just with rocket engines or electric cars. And the way he went into Twitter is a playbook for what he's doing right now in the federal government, which is delete every unnecessary part, question every unnecessary requirement. And if you're not ripping away more than is wise, and you don't have to add some stuff back in the end, then you're not being bold enough.
This is why your book helped me so much, is because he comes in, he gets close to Trump, and he puts the money in, but he makes his appearances, and they're getting along. And when he says, I want to get into efficiency, I remember listening to that on his live Twitter broadcast. I don't know what he calls it. I forgot. And he said, yep. I'd like to help you out. And Trump just went over that. And he goes, no, I'd like to help you out. I like to do efficiency. And I'm thinking to myself, normally, why would a guy who thinks so big and thinks about transforming the electric car business and putting going to space want to do something as seemingly boring? Until you realize the reason why Tesla worked is because he would sleep on the manufacturing floor. He would stare at the production and think, why does that screw need to be needed? Why can't we get this lighter? Why can't the design be better? And you realize he likes the detail of all these things. He does focus on leaning out things and making it more efficient.
You know, God is in the details and the devil is in the details. I really appreciate you've read the book that well, because indeed, that's what he does. He sleeps on the factory floor. And you know what? He slept in the old executive office building last week a couple of times because he's working on government efficiency. There's a quality about Musk in which he is all in. And I find that frightening at times. I mean, look, the book also says, hey, this can be unnerving, because when he sets himself on a mission, whether it's getting to Mars or cutting $2 trillion from the federal budget, he doesn't sort of say, let me balance things, let me be nuanced. He leaves some rubble in his wake, but he knows that's the only way you can get major things done.
So I'm reading the story in the Washington Post today, and I thought Doge was going to be studying things and recommending. I did not know they were full in this aggressively. Do you know that whole, I'm sure you do, do you know that he is looking at that federal workforce of 2.3 million? He already set up a way to lace them all in the same email with his staff and a human resources guy from SpaceX, who you probably know. And he looked and says, guys,
Brian Belding,
And he says, hey, guys, if you want to quit, we'll give you 6 months. You have to come in. If you're not going to come in, you're going to be fired. And I didn't know. No, he did not check with the White House.
You know, in the book, he goes into Twitter about a week after the acquisition. He's actually been staying there overnight. And he says, all right, we're going to do a memo called A Fork in the Road. And there it is in my book, in which he and his young cousin and a couple people, just close core of people at Twitter, figure out how you're going to fire a large percent of the workforce by saying you've got to opt in and decide you want to stay on these conditions. And the memo that he wrote and sent out 2 days ago had the same title to it, A Fork in the Road. So the playbook of everything he is about to do, if I were a government employee, I'd read the playbook, because you can tell what he's about to do from what he did at Twitter and what he's been doing at SpaceX and Tesla.
But you, Walter Isaacson, if you told me you were doing that at your at a company, I'd say, okay. But it's, I don't think it's ever been done like this at a college. Excuse me. At the federal government. And I remember if Teddy Roosevelt.
That's the big issue, just real quick, is this is what we're going to see, because he kind of owns SpaceX. He certainly controls and sort of owns Tesla. He doesn't own the federal government, but you pointed out rightly, he's put his people, these young engineers, all of whom I know, are at the Office of Personnel Management. They're at the Justice Department. They're at all of these agencies, and he is drilling down with his own people in these agencies.
So can he do it? So they have some of them under union. He transferred 50,000 to at-will employees. I don't know if that's going to fly. So he's telling all these people, come to work. Only 3% go to work. Come to the workplace where you're fired. And by the way, if you want to just quit, here's 6 months you can quit. He also renamed the U.S. Digital Services to U.S. Doge Services, where he's sitting down with the government's digital people, and essentially they have to justify their job. I mean, I love this. That he's doing this.
Absolutely. And what he's done is he's found that even what you said earlier in this show about sending an email to all federal employees, that was impossible to do, both technologically, and people thought it might be against the regulations. And Musk just said, I want to find a way to do it, and I want it done within 24 hours where we can send an email to all employees.
So do you think, just now this is your opinion from what you know about Trump and what you know about Musk, the fact that he did not, the White House was caught off guard, not that they would be disagreed with him or slowed him down, I don't know. But do you think we're already seeing some issues with two born leaders?
Yeah, I mean, I think President Trump hasn't shared the limelight or power much during his career. And Elon Musk has never worked for anybody in his career. So it's not a naturally stable molecule. But at the moment, they seem to have strongly bonded. I think Elon Musk can probably be at the White House any time and even, you know, stay over if he needed to. And that bond continues because they both need each other. I think that there is a possibility that Musk does something without checking with Trump, or you saw it happen on a couple of issues where Musk got ahead of Trump or on side Trump. You know, Trump is a interesting character. He likes effective people, but then he can come down hard. It's interesting. Steve Bannon tried to get Musk moved out of the orbit because Bannon is a different type of populist, you know, nationalist populism. And Musk ended up being there in front of the Commerce Secretary at the inauguration with Steve Bannon not there. So at the moment, it's working out for Musk.
Yeah, believe me, Steve Bannon's got some issues, and he's already turned on Trump once. I don't know why he was let back in into that orbit. It doesn't make any sense. So one thing I think is the biggest joke, and I think, Walter, you agree with me, there is no way he was giving a Nazi salute. Guys, the only thing that gets him excited where he loses control, I think, is when he gets in front of crowds. They're chanting his name. He sees the emotion that that Trump brings up. I think he gets moved by it. In my mind, there's no way he was doing a Nazi salute. What about you?
He was a very lonely child. Didn't have many friends. Grew up at the corner of the book, sitting in the corner of the bookstore, as you know from my book, reading X-Men comics and pretending he was a superhero. So you're right. He gets supercharged when he's in front of crowds, and this is a whole new experience to be at rallies cheering for him. But no, I agree. I can't imagine why intentionally he'd be giving a Nazi salute. So no, that's. That was not some intentional Nazi salute.
And if people really cared, they'd call you and say, you spent 2 years, and what do you think? Of course he wouldn't. People don't deny. If they give a Nazi salute, they usually embrace it, according to the black and white video I've had a chance to review. Here's Elon Musk a couple of days ago addressing the German people. Cut 35.
Well, first of all, I wanted to really say that I'm very excited for the IFD, and I think you're really the best hope for Germany. I think some things that, something I think that is just very important is that people take pride in Germany and being German. This is very important. It's okay to be proud to be German. This is a very important principle.
And he went on to say this, cut 36.
I think there's like, frankly, too much of a focus on past guilt, and we need to move beyond that. Children should not be guilty of the sins of their parents.
Your thoughts about his statement that created so much controversy?
Well, it's not something I agree with, and it's not up to me to be preaching my own beliefs. I think that the Germans have to figure out how to wrestle with their past and do it. But I think what Musk taps into is a global phenomenon that's happening, which is a renewed sense of nationalism. And this means too much immigration can hurt a sense of a nation. Many other things reduce nationalism. And whether it's about immigration in England or with Maloney, Prime Minister Maloney, his friend in Italy, or with the German AfD party, he has taken much more of an anti-immigrant nationalist stance. Mm-hmm. You know, if it were me, I would not wander into the territory of should you still be remembering the Holocaust, because I believe you should be.
Right. I guess his point is, guys, if you're going to reach your potential, the Germans in such a wallowing, don't focus on World War II, and that's always a third rail. Lastly, I thought about you, too, in the Oval Office last week after they announced that $500 billion power center with Altman and Oracle CEO Ellison, the Japanese leader. Elon Musk came out and said they don't have the money and it's not going to work. Here's what Trump said.
Mr. President, does it bother you that Elon Musk criticized a deal that you made publicly, that he said that he tweeted that?
No, it doesn't. He hates one of the people in the deals.
Have you spoken to him since then?
No. I've spoken to Elon, but I've spoken to all of them, actually. No, the people in the deal are very, very smart people. But Elon, one of the people he happens to hate, but I have certain hatreds of people, too.
So Trump took it in stride. He used to never do that. What's with him and Altman? I mean, is it really that bad?
Yeah, there are two chapters in the book about Elon Musk and Sam Altman, and they're exactly played out on stage this past week. They started together OpenAI, which, as you know, was supposed to be an open source system, just like the one the Chinese released this past week. And it was supposed to be a nonprofit. Sam then turned it into a for-profit and made it a closed rather than open source code. That truly offended Musk. And even that first week he's in Twitter and trying to fix Twitter, I'm there and he's insisting that Sam Altman come over and bring the founding documents of OpenAI because he wants to get into a fight, a lawsuit with Sam Altman over that. And so I find it interesting that Trump can be amused. Say, hey, there are people I've hated, people whatever. And he knows full well that Elon cannot stand Sam Altman. And maybe having Sam Altman there doing that big deal in the Oval Office was a way of Trump reminding people he's the one in charge.
So he writes about people of the past like Benjamin Franklin, Steve Jobs, and Elon Musk, projects who would be too overwhelming and intimidating to most, including me. But he does it, and you seem to enjoy it. Walter Isaacson, thanks so much. If you want to know about the most impactful person in the world today in a way you never thought possible, pick up Walter's book. Walter, thanks so much. I know we can go for another 2 hours, and hopefully when you're in New York, we can.
All right, Brian. Thank you so much, man.
All right. Back in a moment.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Special announcement for the show. We're thrilled. We've been on WFMD, and we loved it over in Maryland. But now we got good news this week that Frederick, Maryland, WFMD, will be taking us live. And, of course, I wish it wasn't the case, but they're right in the area of Washington, D.C., right by Reagan Airport. So when you see this stuff happening, not only is this an international story, but it's a local story to everyone who listens. So you'll have us 3 hours, all live. So now you can actually use the phones, 1-866-408-7669. And special thanks to Walter Isaacson. I mean, literally, the book is over 1,000 pages. It is amazing that this guy isn't even 60 yet and everything he accomplished. So when people say, I don't like Elon Musk, or I do like Elon Musk, it's not a matter of that. I mean, you could go think about that on a different day. He's playing a role in almost everything that we do. And I think it's for the right reasons. I love what he's doing with government. He just got to learn to tell Trump first. But so far, I have no indication from the Trump team, people around him, that any of that stuff of him getting on Trump's nerves is true. I think it's actually just the opposite. I also think on some level, the 78-year-old doesn't mind that other people are out front. He already knows he goes down in history.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. This show changed dramatically like it did around the country when we saw that plane crash into the Black Hawk, or the Black Hawk into the American Airlines jet that killed 67 people. They've already recovered 28 bodies. Sun came up. They already had gotten 19 in the middle of the night. But there are no survivors, sadly. The water, the fact that these two aircraft crashed. We don't have the answers. We know that between the tower, between the Black Hawk on a training mission, they had three crew members. Maximum would be four, but they said it's not unusual to train with three. And then you have a regional jet with 60-plus passengers, two pilots and two flight attendants. So They were coming in out of Wichita. They were landing. So we have the communication. We even have the video. We're going to get to the bottom of this. We heard it from the Pentagon. We heard from the Transportation Secretary, Sean Duffy, already. He's been on the job for all 24 hours. Pete's been on the job for 2 days. He not only has met with the press, he already put out a tape on what he knows. I'd like to hear from Fort Belvoir about what they know about the aircraft, the Black Hawk. So we're going to get to the bottom of this, but it freaks people out because of the number of Blackhawks buzzing around with the VIPs in Washington, D.C., the amount of people, the important people, and everyday people that go through Reagan Airport, and then we're just not used to these planes crashing. Is this going to be an air traffic controller situation where there's too few working too many hours? we're going to get to the bottom of it. With us this hour, Josh Krasshour, as well as Mark Thiessen. Mark, I want to talk about the confirmations. I do want to talk about the executive orders. But first, your take on what you know about this crash and what stands out.
Yeah, I mean, just like everybody else in D.C., because, you know, Reagan Airport is in the middle of downtown. It's like right near the Capitol. I live in Old Town Alexandria. So, I mean, I think if you stopped 10 people in Washington on the street, 9 of them would have landed in that flight path in the last 6 months. It's how everybody gets in and out of D.C., you know, and so it's just shocking it really shocks you to the core as a person who, you know, literally has flown, as like everybody else, has flown down that flight path and seen helicopters buzzing outside your window. And we all see the helicopters flying around D.C. When I was in the White House, I used to fly in them sometimes. It's a busy, highly restricted airspace. But, you know, just to think that a plane on that path that I've taken, that everybody else in D.C. has taken, crashed is terrifying.
Yeah. Also, the figure skating community has been devastated. They had the national championships there, and the elite skaters were asked to stick around for a camp.
Bunch of little girls.
Yeah. So they flew from Wichita, Kansas, into D.C., including two Russian skating champions. So they've been alerted, and we saw press conferences out in Wichita already. On a much lesser note, I had Tom Cotton on at 6:10 this morning on Fox and Friends, and I asked him, "Are you having committee members?" He goes, "Absolutely. This, are you going to have committee hearings?" And he said, "Yes." This underlines the fact that we have to get people in place. You know, we had Sean Duffy there. There was no reason why he couldn't have been in last weekend. There, Pete Hegseth was at a committee for a week. So come on, get this thing done. So front and center, can you tell me what you think of RFK's testimony yesterday?
I don't think they laid too much of a hand on him. You know, I think that actually the one person who did kind of lay a hand on him is Elizabeth Warren, because he has made millions of dollars suing drug manufacturers, and she asked him if he would forego any future funding, any future profits from lawsuits against drug manufacturers, and he refused. She seems to have kind of caught him in a conflict of interest. You can't be the secretary of HHS while you're making millions of dollars suing drug companies when you're also regulating the drug companies, and you can influence the lawsuits by the policies you make. So I'm not usually someone who agrees with Elizabeth Warren on anything, but she had a pretty good point there. But the larger point, there's a lot of things that RFK has said that are kind of out there. When it comes to vaccines, when it comes to infectious disease, when it comes to other things like that. But you know what? If you don't like the RFK is heading towards HHS, the person to blame is Anthony Fauci, because of the mishandling of the COVID pandemic and all the lies that the American people were told during the COVID pandemic. Trust in public health institutions has absolutely plummeted. And so when public health experts go out and say, well, what he's saying about vaccines is crazy, you know, it's not based on science. Oh, like the science that told us we had to shut down our schools, or the science that told us that that natural immunity isn't good enough, that you have to have vaccinated immunity. Oh, the science that said we had to shut down our businesses. Oh, the science that told us 6 feet distancing and you got to wear masks everywhere you go. Like, people are burned by the experts. They don't trust the experts. And so when you destroy the credibility of expertise, you get RFK. And that's what we're getting.
President of the United States is going to speak in 45 minutes about the plane crash. He already tweeted out or put on Truth Social that it was preventable. This is his great moment. This is the moment I take away and why I think he'd be really good in his spot. He's going to look at a study and say, who did the study and how was it done before I accept it? He's going to who financed it before I'm going to accept it. I'm going to find out who's doing these, who's finding out these conclusions. If you tell me that if you take this polio shot, there's a 98% chance you're not going to get polio, who did the study? He's going to question things. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But why is he doing it? Cut 13.
My question to you is, as Secretary HHS, will you honor these requests from Congress, and will you make HHS transparent?
Yeah, my approach to HHS, as I said before, Senator, is radical transparency. Democrats and Republicans ought to be able to come in and get information that was generated at taxpayer expense, that is owned by the American taxpayer. They shouldn't get redacted documents. Public health agencies should be transparent. And if we want Americans to restore trust in the public health agencies, we need transparency.
And here he went on to say this, cut 14.
I know how to fix it, and there's nobody who will fix it the way that I do, because I'm not scared of vested interests. I don't care. I'm not here because I want a position or a job. I have a very good life and a happy family. This is something I don't need. I want to do this because we're going to fix it. And the other thing is we are attracting now a caliber of people to HHS like never before in history. And they're entrepreneurs. They're disruptors.
That got me excited. You know, changing things, opening things up, doing things for the right reason.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the things, so, you know, we've got the decimation of trust in the public health institutions. There's also never been any accountability for it. Where was the COVID 9/11 commission? Where was the, you know, the 9/11 commission into the closing of our schools and the closing of our businesses and the vaccine mandates and all the lies that were told in the name of public health? So, you know, that's why you get, you know, that's why what RFK says there is appealing. Is he the right person to do it? Look, RFK, let's just be honest about who he is. He is a pro-abortion liberal Democrat who endorsed Donald Trump and is being rewarded for his endorsement because it helped with independence. But he's not one of us, you know, and he may be right on I think he's definitely right when it comes to food safety and some of the food supply. And I think there's a lot to be looking into. Do I believe that he's the right person to do all this? I'm skeptical of that. But I understand why he is where he is, because the trust has been because our public health institutions, just like our, you know, our justice system and our, you know, our intelligence community have all been politicized. And that's why you have Tulsi, and that's why you have Kash Patel. It's like every one of these institutions where people are saying, I can't believe Donald Trump is nominating these people. It's like, well, look at the institution. this is an institution that's failed the American people. The HHS failed the American people during the pandemic. The Justice Department failed the American people by waging war on its politicized prosecutions against a political opponent. The intelligence community, 51 intelligence experts said that the Hunter Biden laptop was Russian disinformation. They told us that Trump was a Russian agent who conspired with Vladimir Putin. There's a decimation of trust in these institutions, and when you lose public trust, this is what you get.
Yeah. So we're going to have testimony from Kash Patel and Tulsi Gabbard today. We're going to have round two or RFK, and then we'll see how they get through. Do you think that, it's up to really Senator Cassidy of Louisiana, because I don't think he's going to get any Democratic support, even though he spent his whole life as a Democrat and his family's the most famous Democratic family in the country. I want to talk about what Trump's doing in the
Sheldon Whitehouse was attacking him like he was some kind of stranger. They were roommates in school together, and he was in his wedding.
No way, really?
Yes. He's sitting there saying, people think you're a threat. It's like, oh, why didn't you tell me that during my wedding ceremony when you're standing there in a morning coat next to me when I was getting married? You know, they literally were roommates.
I did not know that. So, Mark, I want to move on and talk about the president, the speed in which he's doing things. Lakin Riley bill is signed, is now law. That's great. But we don't have the rest are executive orders, over 300. What's happening at the border is astoundingly great. The other things, the communication on the bill on freezing all spending, that was not done well. That was the old Trump. But hopefully when the Office of Management Budget gets a director, we'll have a little bit more organization. Your take on what you've seen so far?
The flurry of activity is both energizing and almost dizzying. You know, we got used to over the last 4 years this sort of sleepy, start at 10 a.m., end of the day at 4 p.m. with a nap in between presidency. And we've gone to life from 0 to 60 in like a split second. Did you see Trump's speech at the Congressional Institute the other day when he went to meet with all the members? And he spent 15 minutes laying out all his accomplishments, in his first week. It was just like, you know, we ended DEI and we declared that there are two genders and we're deporting people and we're doing – it was just like a litany of accomplishments already. And he hadn't even been in office for an entire week yet. I mean, it's just it's so great. And, you know, yeah, when you do that much that quickly, you're going to stumble on some things. And that's fine. And then you course correct and you do it again. And, you know, and people are saying, well, it's all executive orders. Well, the Lake and Riley Act is an executive order. It's a law. And he's going to have three bites at the apple within a year to pass a Republican only reconciliation bill. So we're going to get some legislation, too.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it'll be good to see. And also, I found out, too, and we were just talking to Walter Isaacson a different hour on the show about Elon Musk. His Doge is not only are they at work, they're blitzing. They're the ones who came up with the whole you can leave in 6 months, just promise to resign plan.
Love it.
They went
Love
into
it.
The digital and renamed it U.S. Digital from U.S. to U.S. Doge. And they're making people define with his digital team, making people tell them what they do. And they're going to they're revamping that. And then I did not know this, but Walter Isaacson said that he slept in the Eisenhower building two of the last 3 days. So this guy is doing what he did at Tesla.
I've done that a few times.
Yeah. But I mean,
in the Eisenhower building. I know what it's like. It's not comfortable.
But he is so focused on getting this done. I mean, your thoughts about, but he did not inform the White House that he was doing it. So I'm finding that this is fascinating for me. What do you think?
So first of all, I think the buyouts for the federal workers are absolutely awesome. I hope that at least 10% take them, and we can cut 10% off the top of the federal workforce, and no one would even know.
Well, they got to come to work, or they're going to be fired. So
exactly.
If you don't, yeah, so
exactly.
Make your decision.
But take the buyout. I mean, buyouts I think are genius. And two, I've told you this before, but I think the partnership between Donald Trump and Elon Musk is the greatest partnership between a president and an inventor since Benjamin Franklin and George Washington. And it has the potential to transform our country in very similar ways. Because what we're really experiencing here is really a second American Revolution in a lot of ways. They're trying to revolutionize this country. It's a popular uprising to transform the government, and you've got a partnership between the greatest inventor of his era and the greatest political talent of his era to do it.
Here is what J.D. Vance told Sean last night about what he's noticing about the president. And that is cut 32.
You know, we've, I think, accomplished, honestly, more in 8 days than the entire Biden administration accomplished in 4 years. And of course, the things that we're accomplishing are actually good things, and the things they were accomplishing were mostly bad things. But the president has incredible energy. I mean, this is something you hear other people say about him, and it's hard to really appreciate it until you're up close and personal. I don't know how much he sleeps or if he ever really sleeps.
And we went on to say he got a call at 1 a.m. the other night. Yes, he calls him up just to talk to him, ask him how his kids are. So he's got boundless energy. And I think the difference for me this time with him is that he's letting people do their own thing. We see Pete on tape today as Secretary of Defense. We saw his press conference. We see Sean Duffy do his thing, letting Musk do his thing. And I think that this is going to be good because he thoroughly trusts the people he has.
Yep. And it's not his first rodeo. He's done this before. He knows things he didn't know, 8 years ago when he first came into the Oval Office. He knows how the good levers of power work. He knows where the bodies are buried. He's fundamentally more ready for this job than he was 8 years ago. And I think it shows.
All right. Go get him. Mark Thiessen, thanks for riding the breaking news with us and putting it all in perspective. Have a great weekend.
You too. Take care.
Josh Crash Hour at the bottom of the hour. Your calls next, 1-866-408-7669. The Cash Patel hearing has started. We'll bring you the latest.
The first 100 days, continuing confirmation coverage.
Are you supportive of these onesies?
On the Brian Kilmeade Show. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm just watching a little of the opening statements on Cash Patel, and I think there's a couple of things that are going to happen that I predicted. The hard thing with RFK when he was testifying is his voice, and it's such a struggle for him to get his voice out. You look at the nonverbal cues, it looks like he's getting nervous. I don't think he's getting nervous. I actually think just the opposite, but with Tulsi Gabbard, they're going to go after her directly, but she, number one, it's a woman. I hate to tell you, I don't mean to be sexist. I think people go easier on women. Number one. Number two is she's so composed, so strong, so smart. I think she's going to wow at this event. What Pete did was so interesting during his. They were attacking him personally, accusing him of things that didn't happen. personally. They weren't saying you don't understand the size of the Navy fleet. You don't understand our manufacturing base. They were just going after and saying what happened with this relationship, what happened with that. But he looked comfortable. Kash Patel is coming out firing. And if these people want to go after him and say these are trumped up investigations when he unwound what was happening at the Mueller report, when he was at unwound what happened with the impeachment that Nancy Pelosi trumpeted from, we didn't know him that well then, President Zelensky in Ukraine, when we go after 2020, he's ready to go. He's got these facts. Now, he did put together the January 6th choir, which the president would play at his events. So he's going to have to answer for that. I mean, I'm not a January 6th. There's nothing good about it. It wasn't as bad as you thought. I don't feel that way. But that's what they're going to focus on. And in the end of the day, I think he's going to win over any Republicans that are thinking to themselves, I'm not too sure he's the right guy. I think it's going to be fine. We are looking also at the latest on the investigation on with the American Airlines flight that and the Black Hawk crash. And now the American Airlines spokespeople are beginning to understand that they were actually just in the line of flight. And they didn't do anything. And one of the questions I just read, to paraphrase, was, we don't know why the Black Hawk came into our flight path. So that's where I think this is heading. I don't think you can fault American Airlines at all. And I think this might end up somewhere in the air traffic booth. I think it also might end up with the Black Hawk. Someone was telling me, to be simplistic, that they fly a helicopter. And what you do in the helicopter, you're always looking down. You know, and what you do is usually have officers in the back looking left and right. Well, you only had one in the back, and they were looking at the other side. If they look at the other side, they would have seen the plane. Would it have been enough to move? I'm not sure. But it's freaked people out because all these lawmakers and all these Washington, D.C. residents, they all fly in there.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
American Eagle Flight 5342, operated by PSA Airlines, traveling from Wichita, Kansas to Reagan National Airport, was involved in an accident just before 9 p.m. local time on final approach into Reagan National. It collided with a military aircraft on an otherwise normal approach. And at this time, we don't know why the military aircraft came into the path of the PSA aircraft.
So they're just still trying to find that out. And the American Airlines just says, look, I don't know really what our guys could have done. But we know 60-plus are dead. We know everybody's considered. No one survived the crash that just rocked the country. Also, the figure skating community, sadly, they just completed the national championships from Wichita. Many stay an extra few days for a special camp for the elite athletes, including two Russian champions, and they passed away on this flight. Josh Krashauer joins us now, Fox News Radio political analyst, editor-in-chief of the Jewish Insider. Josh, I guess the airlines, the airport is still closed for another half hour, but nothing's normal, it seems, right?
Yeah, I live right by National Airport, Brian, and it was shocking to hear the news last night. Kind of seen the footage of the crash that was taken, I believe, by the Kennedy Center webcam was just shocking, and you expected the worst. And as we heard this morning, that we're now in a not in a rescue operation anymore, but a recovery operation. So it is a. I mean, the next question obviously is going to be how could this happen? This is the first major commercial airline aircraft in the United States since 2009. And President Trump is going to be speaking in a little bit, but there's going to be a lot of questions in the coming days on how something this tragic and this preventable could have happened.
So Kash Patel is right now testifying. He's getting some tough questions from Dick Durbin, who believes, again, like every Democrat, January 6th is the only time there was ever crime in this country. So he's focusing on that, the pardon power, and Kash Patel is going right back at him and saying, what about Joe Biden's pardon? So there'll be some sparring there. If Kash Patel doesn't lose any Republicans, he'll get through. RFK yesterday, he's got round two today. So I think the one thing that's underlined now after seeing this tragedy, we got to get these people confirmed. OMB has no director. Sean Duffy's only could have been on last week. He's only been on 24 hours. Thankfully, he could make a speech to Pentagon Secretary Pete Hegseth just 2 days ago. He could have been voted on last week. We don't know why Doug Burgum is not voted on today. I hope so. Pam Bondi, we're just waiting for a vote. What is the advantage to America for this slowdown?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, the most controversial nominees, I would put Gabbard, RFK Jr., and Kash Patel, though I think he's going to pass fairly comfortably with most Republicans. I think all Republicans probably supporting him, or most of the Republicans in the Senate. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of controversies that we're hearing right now. I'm watching. I have three. This is one of those days where you need the red zone to follow all the congressional hearings and the breaking news from the White House and all the agencies. But no, I mean, it actually was sort of remarkable. Sean Duffy at Transportation was literally sworn in hours before the crash and was able, I mean, literally didn't even have a chance to fully get settled before the having to go in front of the cameras and get briefed on all the breaking news and just the crisis at hand. So look, I think there will be an imperative. The FAA doesn't have an administrator. I think that's going to be a big question also, that having someone in these key positions, key agencies regarding airline safety and transportation are going to be crucial as we learn more about this accident.
So some of the RFK stuff, I hope he gets through. Here's Bernie Sanders, who was, you know, compared to some others, was relatively fair, but this got bizarre, cut 19.
And yet your organization is making money selling a child's product to parents for $26, which casts fundamental doubt on the usefulness of vaccines. Can you tell us now that you will, now that you are pro-vaccine, that you're going to have your organization take these products off the market?
Senator, I have no power over that organization. I'm not part of it. I resigned from the board.
Yeah, that was just a few months ago. You founded that. You certainly have power. You can make that call. Are you supportive of this?
I've had nothing to do with
leadership. Are you supportive of these onesies?
I'm supportive of vaccines.
Are you supportive of these onesies? These are some of the questions I never thought I'd hear.
Yeah, I got a kick out of that. Look, this is the Democrats don't know how to really. I mean, this is an example of how Democrats have really struggled in the opposition in the first week of the Trump administration. There's a lot of things you could go after RFK Jr. with. I actually was sort of struck by Elizabeth Warren's questioning. And she's supposed to be this really aggressive prosecutor. There's obviously a lot of fodder against RFK Jr. And she was trying to make the insinuation that he was making money off of his activism. If anything, the substance is what's, I think, much more damaging. But with Elizabeth Warren, everyone, you know, she thinks everyone is bought off, I guess. And that's pretty much her MO. So she's not able to adjust her playbook when it comes to a different type of nominee. No, I mean, look, I think the organization that Sanders is talking about has taken a lot of very controversial positions, and Republicans have advocated against that organization for many, many years. So there's a lot of fodder there to focus on a onesie. You know, I cracked up a little bit when I heard that. But there is a lot of substance. But Democrats didn't, you know, by and large, there were a few senators I thought that had some credible lines of questioning, but they didn't take advantage of the opportunity.
So you got the 100 days, and the president's pace is just unbelievable. He also blasted Jay Powell for not cutting interest rates, so he doesn't mind working the refs. It didn't work this time, but maybe it'll work next time. Says you guys jacked up inflation. You left me with it. You and Joe Biden. So this is typical Donald Trump. And I kind of like it. He also said walk back the federal workers freeze. He's no longer going to do any hiring, but they're not going to freeze all programs. Your thoughts about that? I thought that could have been rolled out better, but they'll re-queue it up when they get an OMB director.
Yeah, look, the privileges that many in the federal government have benefited from, especially since the pandemic, where there's been very generous remote work policies, these agencies, many of them have gotten very bloated. They didn't use a scalpel to deal with the situation. I don't know if you can deal with the federal government and the bureaucracy with a scalpel, but they probably overreached to the extent they're getting a lot of litigation, and there's a little bit of walk back. I think the more significant walk back was the other directive, the executive order, paring back, temporarily at least, pausing the spending for certain programs, and it sounds like it got walked back yesterday. But I think there's when you win a big election, when you have a lot of political capital, the big question is always, do you spend it right away, or do you kind of wait till you get your wait till you get your cabinet secretaries in, wait till you get everyone in place, wait till you have a game plan, and then kind of have a more concerted playbook. I think they've done a lot of things right, and I think they've been much more organized than they were than Trump was in the first term. But that was an example where I think they overplayed their hand. It was sort of reminiscent of the ban, the Muslim ban of the first term that ended up getting pushed back on. And I think the big question, I mean, there are a lot of Trump changed the Republican Party in that, you know, there were a lot of Republicans who did want to tackle federal spending as have been all about balanced budgets and cutting waste and some of these programs. But there are people that benefit from them, and I think they heard. I talked to some Republican lawmakers who were getting an earful from their constituents, people who voted for Donald Trump, about the future of some of these programs and the future of some of the spending that was supposed to be coming in. So that got walked back. That was a pretty quick walk back. And I think Trump needs to be very wary about how much political capital he spends. He certainly has it, but if he spends it too fast and alienate some people in his own party, that's not a good recipe for future success.
So look at the border crossings. ICE enforcement as of Wednesday, 1,016 arrests, 814 detainers lodged. The border encounters in 7 days, the last 7 days of Biden, 20,860. The last 7 days of Trump, 7,000. Daily was 1,041. With Biden, is 2,869. The crossings at the Del Rio sector down to 60. Biden had it up to 4,000. There was up to 4,000. I mean, do you believe this is happening?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think one of the most powerful parts about these executive orders and the raids that are taking place is they're just sending a message. I mean, Biden's message in the first month of his administration in 2021 was the border is open and we're rolling back all the Trump policies. The message from Trump is that we're enforcing the law and we're deporting illegal immigrants, and he's showing a sign of force and strength with these moves early on. Look, I think it's going to send a very, very strong message. Even if there's going to be, there's going to be litigation, all the lawyers are going to be getting involved. But ultimately, the policy and the focus of this first week is really going to be what sticks. And I think you're not going to see the kind of numbers you saw in that first year of the Biden administration.
So when you look at the Democrats and how they're going to push back, they thought that they had this big victory with the pause on spending, which unless it's getting individual payments. And when they reversed it, they said, now we're beginning to get our feet. What do you think?
Well, I don't think. Look, the first vote the Senate took was the Laken Riley Act. And how many Democrats voted with Donald Trump? 12 Democrats, many of them from swing states that realized the politics on the issue of immigration are squarely in Donald Trump's corner, that more voters, including a lot of Democrats, want tougher enforcement. They don't think the previous administration was serious about it, and they actually are not. You know, there's only upside to the aggressive actions that Trump is taking. DEI, the transgender executive orders. I mean, you look at the New York Times did a poll last week that these are both like 80-20 issues, especially on the trans activism front. Those are issues that Democrats, frankly, have not even really engaged in because I think they realize how important of an issue that was to Trump's success in the last election. I like I said, I think where things get a little dicey, where he may have went a little too far is on, you know, the wide-ranging spending cuts or spending pauses that affect a lot of programs that Republicans and a lot of voters across the country benefit from. And instead of using the scalpel and focusing on DEI or, well, you know, some of the more wasteful programs, by going so big and the wording of that order was so vague that it really, you know, scared a lot of Republicans. I think the White House heard it loud and clear, and they walked it back pretty soon thereafter. And I think you can't afford to make those kind of mistakes when you do have the opportunity to go on offense on a whole lot of other issues.
I hear you. Here's Chuck Schumer, Cut 29.
We saw what happens when Americans fight back against disastrous policies. Americans made their voices heard. Donald Trump rescinded the OMB order. Now he should rescind the nomination of Russell Vogt. When the Trump administration announced this awful directive on Monday night, we knew immediately it was short-sighted, disastrous, cruel, and dumb.
Your thoughts?
Look, this is what they're. I mean, I think Democrats at least are honing in on the issue, this issue, because they were totally messageless for the first week, and they didn't really know what to say. They were all over the map. John Fetterman was in one space, and you had people like Chris Murphy and Elizabeth Warren in another direction. At least this is one thing that pretty much unites the party, and they think that it was a little overreach. But look, Trump already walked back the order. They're going to be moving on. There are going to be a lot of other executive orders. I mean, I think that two more came out yesterday focused on school choice and fighting anti-Semitism on campuses. Those are also very popular issues where Democrats are finding themselves also on the defensive. So, I mean, there's a lot of – I mean, one of the – I think the brilliant attributes of the first week politically is that they've really – been prepared and they've been coming fast and furious. So this is one thing that the Democrats are able to hone in on, but there are a lot of other things Trump has been doing, namely on border security, but a whole lot of other executive orders that Democrats have been playing defense on, and they really haven't been able to catch up. Republicans are operating at social media speed. Democrats are kind of operating at like legacy media speed.
Yeah, they had an emergency meeting after Trump. They go, tomorrow. Emergency meeting. Tomorrow. You have an emergency meeting that night. But there, some good news. Israel says three Israelis and five Thai hostages are to be released over in Gaza. So that's phase one is continuing. What are you hearing about the chance? And by the way, they had to give up, I'm trying to think, how many hostages? Over 100 prisoners in order to get them back. Your thoughts about this?
Yeah, I mean, this is people don't realize this first phase is going to take over a month, like for this process to really play itself out. And there's still Steve Witkoff, Trump's envoy to the region, is actually in the Middle East and trying to make sure that this deal goes through. Now, if you saw some of the images and the footage that of the hostages being released, they were tormented in their final hours and minutes outside of Gaza, where they were, terrorists like screaming at them and yelling at them and scaring them. I mean, this is a real insight on the kind of people that Israel has to deal with on their border. And it also created some hiccups in the process because it was against what was negotiated. But look, I mean, I think it's going to be very difficult to get to the second and third phase, given some of the difficult details on both. But for Israel to kind of allow Hamas to have some kind of operational control without being able to defend, without being able to have full military operational
Hamas cannot get back. You heard Michael Waltz. Hamas cannot go back in power. So that's just a non-starter. There's no way. Even though right now they are the number one power there, they're taking credit for the aid that's coming in. They're escorting with a show of force in their camouflage outfits. They're escorting the prisoners forward like they haven't lost 17,000 in battle.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of shocking. And I think Mike Waltz's comments are a reminder that, the end goal cannot be Hamas staying in power. The worry is that, like, if you like, you look at the detail. I mean, it's going to be hard to get to those second and third phases without another, without having some military defense against Hamas reestablishing itself.
All right, Josh, thanks so much. Talk to you again.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, we'll have all the breaking news on the plane crash. We'll have some news about Kash Patel and Tulsi Gabbard reading her opening statements, and there'll be a rematch, RFK Jr. in front of a different committee today. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Fox and Friends is America's morning show.
We wake up with America.
Good morning, you guys.
Good morning.
You guys are just really got me pumped up this morning.
People have made us part of their routine.
We're in their kitchens, on their televisions, and waking up their families.
They get a dose of America with the show. There's no hiding our personalities.
It's conversation, credible news, interesting interviews, and a lot of fun.
And we all bring different things to the table. We all have different backgrounds, but all similar values. And I think those are America's values.
So that is a little behind the scenes on Fox and Friends. And it's a segment about 40 minutes long on Fox Nation. They did a great job putting it together. If you want to know the history of the show, some footage you haven't seen or ever or be reminded of, check it out. So I think you'll like it on Fox Nation. Quick note, too. I'm going to go on stage. WOKV listeners know this. I'll be in Jacksonville. Hopefully people from around Florida, Georgia will be able to come out. North Carolina, South Carolina, who knows? The Florida Theater in downtown Jacksonville, February 15th, Saturday night at 8 o'clock. It'll be streaming on Fox Nation, too. And then we'll go March 22nd. KTFK listeners over in St. Louis will be on stage bringing history to life, history, liberty, and laughs. But it's all organized, but it's unscripted. It is a fun interactive night. And at the end, we'll open up for questions and answers, VIP opportunities where I could talk to you before the show. But it's usually the most fun you have. And there'll be Fox Nation specials for everyone that comes there, opportunity to get books, pictures. And it's my chance to see you guys in person. So go to BrianKilmeade.com. I'll see you there.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. What a horrific day. Last night, 9 o'clock, we hear about a plane crash. It was between a American Airlines 60. It was a regional jet and a Blackhawk. And now we find out it was the worst in-flight disaster in American history. And we find out everybody passed away. Sadly, that was pretty much inevitable when you heard about it. And then we're trying to find out between the air traffic controller, the Blackhawk hitting the jetliner. Bottom line is, it's a tragedy all the way around. 24 hours into the job, Sean Duffy, transportation secretary, has got to investigate it. In the morning, he's got to explain it. It's a Blackhawk military jet from Fort Belvoir. 24 hours, 48 hours into the job, Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth's got to investigate it. He's got to explain it. He put out a tape. Sean Duffy had a press conference. President of the United States put out a Truth Social post saying this was totally avoidable. There's a lot of things, a lot of moving parts. I am not smart enough to figure it out. Well, everybody else on the scene has not. But I will say this. I'm wondering if it goes back to air traffic controllers being overworked. I'm also wondering about the communication, because we have it. And it says the Blackhawk pilot was said, you have an airliner there in layman's terms. And he says, yeah. Do you see it? He says, yes. So military people are writing me and said, yeah, all that could be true, but he could have been looking at the wrong airline. So if you have four people on the Blackhawk, they say there's a person in every window and you see, you have eyes on everything. There was only one in the back. And most people wrote me, a guy, I bet you it was on the other side in which he plowed into the jet. Kevin O'Leary's going to be with us this hour. Not only is he a successful businessman, he's right in the thick of things in politics, fresh off a trip to Mar-a-Lago, one of the people putting together a team to buy TikTok, and we thoroughly appreciate that. Also, I want to get his take on Monday's big story, and that's the crash of the AI tech stocks because of what China, in DeepSeek, was able to pioneer. Upon further review, David Sachs says... who's now head of AI and cryptocurrency, former co-founder of PayPal, as well as a myriad of other major billion-dollar projects, says, I think ChatGPT says, I'm pretty sure they stole our stuff. So should we expect that from China? Yeah. Was it open? Yes. But experts say they took way too much. So we are looking at all those things. I'm not going to do the investigation in real time. Let me also tell you what other balls are in the air. Cash Patel is off to a pretty good start as he tries to become the FBI director. And it's a 6-year term. But Donald Trump, who got Christopher Wray in after Robert Mueller went out and he fired James Comey, who replaced Robert Mueller, he said Christopher Wray's got to go. So Cash Patel will take over, I think. He's off to a strong start. He's got Grassley's approval, clearly, especially if you listen to the quote. He told me that this morning. What am I thinking? And Senator Cornyn also. Two law and order guys, traditional Republicans, conservative Republicans. And, of course, Senator Whitehouse just goes and gives a bunch of speeches, does some polls from his book and says how inaccurate and unqualified he is. And when he goes to answer and qualify, he says, don't take time away from me. For the life of me, why are you a senator and why can't you ask a question? If you're giving a speech, you can do that any time on the floor of the Senate. But this is your chance to listen, many of which are lawyers, and be able to listen and ping pong back and forth with somebody that you're convinced is not worthy. So we'll bring you some of that. We'll also bring you some Tulsi Gabbard is also beginning to testify. Last time I saw Tulsi Gabbard was giving her opening statements. Now we also find out within this hour, the President of the United States will think about the midair crash that happened in the Potomac at the busiest airport in the country, Ronald Reagan Airport, which so many people can relate to. And sadly, this is going to devastate the U.S. figure skating community. They're fresh off the national championships in Wichita, Kansas. And they're heading there in a relatively new route, I understand. They now, only a year ago, American Airlines started flying there. So they fly into Reagan, and the plane gets slammed, and everyone passes away. But it wiped out a lot of great families, figure skating championship families, as well as a Russian pair. So the championship ended on the 25th for the elite skaters. They stuck around for a camp into the 28th. They hop on that plane, and sadly, they lose their life. So that is how we started the day. And now we have all the moving parts from yesterday. Here's a little of what we can tell you happened. Cut one.
We're now at a point where we are switching from a rescue operation to a recovery operation. At this point, we don't believe there are any survivors from this accident. And we have recovered 27 people from the plane and one from the helicopter.
So, you know, it's amazing. Now they're getting closer and closer to a full recovery because I think where they landed, where the crash happened and where they fell to the ground, 7 feet of water. So, and it is 35 degree water. So they say you can't last more than 15 minutes because of hypothermia. So we'll keep you up to date on that. We'll see what the president has to say. He also issued executive orders yesterday, everything from school choice to condemning college campus, anti-Semitism on college campuses. It's very hard for people to keep up. And I think, ladies and gentlemen, that's the point. So here's a little Kash Patel. He was taking these questions from Lindsey Graham. And Lindsey Graham brought up the fact that he was ahead of the game, like Devin Nunes, with Devin Nunes, on what was really going on the Russia investigation. Look, I talked to Republicans who didn't know Donald Trump too well in 2016, 2017, after he won. They did not know for sure that he was not collaborating with Russia. They knew that things didn't line up, but the momentum got Robert Mueller that devastated the country, that thorough investigation. Here's Kash Patel on Crossfire Hurricane. That was the name of the FBI operation, which was an embarrassment to this nation.
Is it fair to say that the people in charge of investigating Crossfire Hurricane hated Trump's guts?
Well, you don't have to take my word for it. That statement, along with the statements from the sources.
Are those days over in the FBI, you hope?
Well, if they're not, they will be.
Okay, good.
I mean, you saw all these guys, and they all got CNN and MSNBC contracts after, and James Comey wrote a book, and sanctimonious to James Comey. I hope now we look back and realize this egomaniac was out of control. So what Donald Trump has done, and you're seeing it in his performance, he had good people last time. They knew what they were doing, but they didn't really understand what he was doing, and they didn't really trust him, General Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Mattis, Secretary of Defense. Kelly comes in to replace Reince Priebus, and Trump never really, and I like Reince, but never really forgot that Reince told him to drop out after the Access Hollywood tape went out. So there was some imminent distrust along with a massive investigation that not only stopped him from doing what he wanted to do as a new president, investigated his family, Don Jr., as well as Jared. Jared, in his book, writes who thought he was going to go to jail. And it all really started the FBI. It started with Hillary Clinton, picked up by the FBI, and then he did their dirty work. But not all the FBI. The 35,000, almost all hardworking people that don't get paid enough or get enough credit, but the ones on the seventh floor in Washington, D.C. were the issue. So Dick Durbin obviously does not like Kash Patel. How do I know? I don't know. You make the call.
Was President Donald Trump wrong to give blanket clemency to the January 6th defendants?
Thank you, Ranking Member. A couple of things on that. One, the power of the presidential pardon is just that, the president.
Alignment, I concede he has the authority. I'm asking, was he wrong to do it?
And as we discussed in our private meeting, Senator, I have always rejected any violence against law enforcement, and I have, including in that group, specifically addressed any violence against law enforcement on January 6th, and I do not agree with the commutation of any sentence of any individual who committed violence against law enforcement.
So that, I thought that was significant because it goes against what Trump did. So Kash is as loyal as it gets, but I'm sure he cleared that with the president. He's right. But I would also bring up this. Hey, Senator Durbin, were you upset with the 4,000 police officers that were assaulted in New York City? I never heard you speak out when you saw a 17 and 19-year-old illegal alien kick the crap along with eight others out of two police officers on New Year's Eve last year. Did you speak out, Senator? Do you speak out anytime police were beat up in 2020 with the George Floyd riots? I don't remember you speaking out, Senator. Were you? See, January 6th, a terrible day. No one questions that. But that's not when crime started and ended. But that's what you had the FBI focused on, didn't you, for the next 2 years? I hope Cash is smarter than me. I hope he starts digging in on that, because the senators are going to be forced, and outside Adam Schiff, who's directly involved, I think, they're going to be forced to defend something that's indefensible, and that is a blatant partnership and attack on a previous administration while hiding the laptop for the next administration that would have revealed the corruption of the Biden family. We're going to take a short time out. Come back with Kevin O'Leary, discuss all this, the latest in the investigation, the latest on the testimony, the latest on the AI race. We crashed the market on Monday. Will it do it again? This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Guantanamo has long been a place for migrants. In fact, in the 90s, tens of thousands of Haitian and Cuban migrants staged there as part of a crisis. We have an even bigger crisis on our hands right now. It was mentioned, 7,500 violent illegals have been captured by ICE in the last 9 days. God bless them. Where do you move them? I'll tell you what, no one's going to be waiting on the Defense Department. We're going to lean forward. We've made sure that we're staging on the border to protect it, that we've got gray tails, which are known as military aircraft, to help mass deportations. And Guantanamo Bay, Jesse, is a perfect spot.
And that was Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth last night doing his first series of interviews. Will Cain 3 hours later, 4 hours later, Jesse Waters talking about taking the illegal immigrants, criminals that have been shipped out. Countries won't take them back. Oh, we don't trust they can hold on to them, over to Gitmo where there's 30,000 beds. Bottom line, the speed in which things are happening, let alone things that are uncontrollable like the midair crash, the worst in our history that took place last night at 9 o'clock. Show what's going on in Washington and around the country. Kevin O'Leary's keeping up with it all. If he's not on air, he's doing business, and he's back with us right now in studio. And we're seeing, Kevin, the President of the United States addressing the tragedy that happened last night. And he did put out Truth Social, a statement. Unbelievable. How often do you come to Washington and use that airport?
A lot. So I know that approach, it's heavily populated. I'm wondering, and I'm speculating when I say this, perhaps the pilot steered the plane into the river, hoping it would be an outcome like we had in New York years ago. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. So I'm speculating a lot of those people drowned.
Yeah, well, I think he got smashed by a Blackhawk, so I don't know if you can survive that. So that would be the key. A lot of people say it looks like the American airline was just going into land from Wichita, and they had no choice. They got hit, and were they able to come up with some type of information on why the Black Hawk kept going? But we're seeing this massive investigation and the president reacting in real time. But Kevin, my goodness, you got to be able to put your people in place. We got to come up with a better system. We're going through this with a slow mo. Can you imagine having a business and taking months to put your officers in place? That's the way the government's running now with these confirmations and nominations.
Yeah, you know, it's too bad that we, in modern times, remember when the Constitution was written, it was only horseback between states. So you had to give time for the administration to change and the word get out across the nation. Today, we don't have that problem. And we leave administrations in place for weeks, making crazy things happen, good and bad. We have an election. You should immediately accelerate the implementation of the new administration, including the president. So you get control of these things faster, and I think we're seeing a lot of the damage that was done in this conversion, this transition. This is a horrific outcome, though. I mean, it's so sad. You know, the plane's landing at that speed, probably like under 200 miles an hour. If it hit land, it might have – I don't know. I'm speculating. I think people might have survived.
I mean, because we did just see the survival situation over in Brazil a short time ago, which we hadn't seen in a while.
Right.
Here's Sean Duffy addressing the crash. And we'll pull back some from the president, who's now talking. Cut four.
I don't want to say too much on the communication between the helicopter in the tower and the airline in the tower. But I will say this. There was communication. It was, I would say, standard communication. So there was not a breakdown, if that's your question, in communication between the military helicopter and the American airline flight. There was communication between the aircraft and the tower.
And it was communication with the Blackhawk. And the Blackhawks said, can you see? They said, can you see the plane? He said, yes. And I've had a general write me this
morning.
Turns
out it was the wrong plane.
And said, yeah, I was looking at a different plane.
Yeah. I mean, it's so busy there. Anybody that's landed there, I mean, it's plus it was a clear night and just a horrible tragedy. But this will wake up the whole system. Hopefully it'll be avoided. Military operations so close to civilian airports. It also makes you speculate about drone technology, how we're going to have to integrate every little drone flying around into the FAA system. So we know where they are. That's going to be a whole new technology because drones are definitely in our future, whether they be for security or delivery of drugs or whatever they're going to do. Same problem. You don't want vehicles hitting each other.
Right. And the other thing is with the drones, it hit one of those planes that we use to put out fires that we borrowed from Canada, and a drone hit it and disabled it for 2 weeks in California while the wildfires were still burning.
Yeah, you can put a turkey through the engine, but not a drone.
Kevin O'Leary here. Kevin, we see a businessman in motion, and he's 350 as of this morning. Executive actions, executive motions. Your thought?
Yeah, well, he understands. I mean, Trump's second time around. This is Trump 2.0. So he knows he's got 24 months before he probably loses his majority mandate in the midterms. And that just generally happens to any administration. You lose a few seats. That's just what happens. So he knows he's pretty good for the next 24 months. So why not get it all done if you're really a legacy president now? This is a legacy opportunity for him. We had lots of issues in the first mandate. He got a majority mandate coming into the second. And now he wants to deliver. And I think he's doing it. He's really focusing on everything he campaigned on. He's not screwing around. And I think that's what people like about Trump 2.0.
See, it was interesting. He sat there with Karen Bass, and I thought about you, the mayor of Los Angeles. And he's sitting there, and he says, these people want to get back in their house. He goes, yes, we got to keep them safe. He goes, they're safe. Let them back in their house. Let them make their own decisions. They want to start working on their property. They want to start getting dumpsters in. They want to start designing things. He goes, yes, we're in the matter of doing that. We'll get some inspectors. He goes, no, let's do it now. The business aspect of Trump, get it done now, that Musk is bringing his attitude of why don't we fix this? Why can't this be done? He's doing it with Doge in real time. And this president's doing it with executive actions, executive orders. Watch me, try to catch me. And the same thing with get things done attitude over in California. And we're just not seeing that happen. In Los Angeles, they voted on politicians that have never done anything like you've done in business before. And it's showing.
Yeah, California is a special situation because if you look at what's occurred to that state with all the business leaving based on very anti-business policy, well, it caught up with them. So I think, you know, Gavin Newsom and Mayor Bass, they're under the pressure cooker now. This probably really hurts their political opportunities down the road. And I say for Newsom because I was very critical of him and still am, but this is his Giuliani moment. You remember when 9/11 hit and nobody knew who Giuliani was anywhere around the world? I know he's had issues lately, but at that time, he stepped up. He made it known to everybody around the world that this catastrophe was going to get fixed in record time, which is what he did. And I think, you know, this is an opportunity for Newsom to step up. And either he'll do it or he won't, because I think the people of California are pretty unhappy right now.
He's pretty much saying it's really not my problem.
Well, that's not the right answer.
I don't think so. Kevin's going to stick around. We got to talk about TikTok and also what happened with the market on Monday. And we'll bring back some of the president's remarks after the horrific plane crash last night. So glad you're here.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The release of DeepSeek AI from a Chinese company should be a wake-up call for our industries that we need to be laser-focused on competing to win, because we have the greatest scientists in the world. Even Chinese leadership told me that. They said, you have the most brilliant scientists in the world in Seattle and various places. But Silicon Valley, they said, there's nobody like those people.
That was the President of the United States talking about Monday when the market dropped and DeepSeek comes out with an AI product that they said was better than OpenAI and everything Google and Gemini put out. Kevin O'Leary, my guest. Kevin, what has happened since we found out that DeepSeek came in so under budget and so impressive that it could have crashed the market?
Well, like happens so much in China, there's no IP protection. And so this is ripped off code from OpenAI. But the question about the $6 million CapEx to build this, I call BS on it. Most likely what happened, 5,000 to 6,000 NVIDIA cards out of Singapore. I'm speculating here. But it was subsidized by the CCP. They built this thing to compete, but they also built it to scrape data. If you install that and read the agreement, they're scraping your emails. And so Italy, rumored just a couple hours ago, has banned it already. This is probably an attempt when there's a 50-50 chance of TikTok being put down and go dark in 60 days. These are lifeboats for the Chinese that want to keep scraping American data because they know the ultimate war is AI eventually and propaganda. And so this tool, if you actually query it, is very, very pro-China, as you'd expect. And all of that's come to the light in the last 24 hours. But the idea that they somehow built a $6 million engine that costs billions to make is total crap.
And the stealing, this is so open technology, but not everything was open, but they took more than they possibly said they did. And number two, NVIDIA, they did use NVIDIA chips, but they used, I guess, the cheaper NVIDIA chips.
They supposedly, it's illegal for them to have them. And so,
they found a hole in Biden's
band. They did
the
black market trade on these things. You know, who knows how they got them. But the point is, we're in a war on AI with China, and we better win because it matters for defense, national security, just advancement of productivity in every of 11 sectors in the American economy. This is serious stuff, and the race is on, and I think we got to support it, which means we need a lot more data centers all over the United States and wherever else we can put them. They're building them in Finland off hydro and off nuclear power, up in Alberta, North Dakota, West Virginia. We got to get the permits going here. We got to get these things built ASAP.
So, Kevin, that leads to the bigger story in TikTok. Everyone's talking about, well, it's an algorithm. Do you want China to have your data? That's important. But the other thing is, do you want China to control your news? That's why TikTok's got to be sold. And I think Trump realizes that. Do you?
Oh, 100%. But you got to realize something. And people have ignored this about the structure of ByteDance itself. ByteDance is a wildly successful company of which TikTok in the U.S. is nothing. It's like 8.9% of revenue. So they can afford to turn it off in the U.S. And it's not going to change the market cap of ByteDance at all. ByteDance is probably going to make $4 billion in free cash flow this quarter. I mean, it's got a lot of other businesses there. And so you got to appeal to the shareholders of ByteDance, including some American shareholders, but the founders themselves have 25%, and say, look, if you want to keep it lit up in the United States, we're going to have to at least follow the order of Congress and the rules 9-0 from the Supreme Court about how we rebuild a U.S. version of it. And I think it could be a really interesting opportunity for a cooperation between these two competing nations to solve for this, because TikTok's on 170 million Americans' phones, and my guys, 6.5 million American businesses, I call them the shark tankers, they're all companies 1 to 3 million in sales, they use it. And you want all that business to go to Facebook and Instagram? Then there's no competition. I'd rather keep it lit up on a compliant basis. So I've got the only offer with Frank McCourt. Only us, the two of us, have an offer in front of the bankers of ByteDance. All the rest is speculation. There's lots of other guys talking about buying it, but we have something structural to work with.
So, but do you have a partner?
Yes.
No, do you have a partner? Do you have somebody that's looking to deal? Have
to you that in our to case, in the court's case in O'Leary, we have Guggenheim. So in terms of raising capital, debt, and equity, we can do that. But we also have to partner with Oracle. That's where the servers are. And everybody's talking to everybody else. If you made the assumption that every single buying group that's announced their interest, I've talked to all of them. They were all talking together because we all have the same problem, the Supreme Court order. That's a problem. That thing says specifically, and Cotton himself, I've spoken to all of these. I've gone all over the Hill for the last month on TikTok. It's clear. We cannot use the Chinese code. We have to come up with something else with an oversight element to it from DOD or DOJ or whoever it's going to be that gets assigned monitoring social media. And the bigger problem with social media, the litigation. The amount of litigation, the state, attorneys, state attorneys, or just parents groups or sovereign countries, they don't like the fact that you have data that you don't own that you're trading and making a profit on. We got to change the whole metric.
Well, that's true. And we have Facebook that just paid $25 million to Trump for banning them. 4 years ago.
For me, it's like, why buy all that litigation? Why not come right out of the gates on the new TikTok and say, guys, you own your own data. We're like a telco. You can move your telephone number around. We solved that problem in the early 90s with the Telco Act. We said, okay, telco companies don't own your personal phone number. So why should social media companies own your data? You own your data. That'll be the new TikTok 2.0.
McCourt wrote a book about it. That's exactly what he did. He wants to give you control of your
personal data. Yeah, that's why
data.
I joined Frank's bid, because he makes a lot of sense and it solves. And also, I don't want to buy all this litigation. Like, who wants to get sued for billions of dollars every month? It's enough with that. It's over. That we have to change the metric by which social media works.
Absolutely. But I think that there's not one person clear-eyed who thinks that it does not have to be sold within 30 days. I also worry, as a country, you just can't blow off laws you don't want. And the president doesn't want to start this way. It was out of his hands. He could even say, hey, I know you 16 to 18 to 20-year-olds use TikTok. It was done before I got here. I had to sell it. The Supreme Court spoke.
But I don't think Trump is going to try and reverse the 9-0 decision at the Supreme Court, or is he going to try and get Congress to modify the law they passed on a bipartisan basis? We're going to have to live with those rules. The question is, can McCourt and I solve this for the shareholders of ByteDance? Otherwise, they'll just turn it off, because it's not going to really affect them financially.
So the other thing I want to talk to you is about, real quick, we have 1 minute, energy. So you always talk about nuclear. You talked about different things that you wanted to do. You know that this country now wants to turn on the spigots, but oil and gas doesn't. They like it at $70 a barrel. So they'll drill, but they don't want to drill too much and flood the market. But on natural gas, is that a different story that's got Kevin O'Leary interested?
Yeah, it is, because I'll tell you, the states that have sort of natural gas, that's, want to call it orphaned is a good word. It's not connected to anything. North Dakota, West Virginia, and the province of Alberta have billions and billions of cubic meters of stranded gas. So if we can get turbines there, these GE turbines that they just got $500 million or $1 billion getting invested in them, dual cycle turbines are very clean, very green, and they produce electricity, and we need those. And so I'm looking for those three locations, West Virginia, North Dakota, and Alberta, Canada, for the next projects for data centers. That's what I'm working on.
You realize you have an interior secretary from North Dakota who is all ears when it comes to that and knows the tech center.
Doug Burgum, I know him very well. I work for him now. I run the venture fund for the state of North Dakota.
He is the best. Kevin O'Leary, thanks so much for your quality time.
Take care.
I look forward to finding out what those five deals that were lighting up your phones were all about in a moment. Brian Kilmeade, we'll be back with Donald Trump and J.D. Vance's comments about that horrible midair crash.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I speak to you this morning in an hour of anguish for our nation. Just before 9 p.m. last night, an American Airlines regional jet carrying 60 passengers and four crew collided with an Army Black Hawk helicopter carrying three military service members over the Potomac River in Washington, D.C., while on final approach to Reagan National Airport. Both aircraft crashed instantly and were immediately submerged into the icy waters of the Potomac. Real tragedy. The massive search and rescue mission was underway throughout the night, leveraging every asset at our disposal. And I have to say, the local, state, federal military, including the United States Coast Guard in particular, they've done a phenomenal job. So quick, so fast, it was mobilized immediately. The work has now shifted to a recovery mission. Sadly, there are no survivors.
So that was President Trump addressing directly what happened last night. And we're not used to this. We're not used to somebody so engaged, who knows every detail of what's going on, issuing executive order while reordering the governments, freezing spending, picking up illegal immigrants, sending them to Gitmo. And now he's there taking questions in a press conference after this horrific tragedy. And most of the questions are on this. But the president says this. Since the 1980s, he's been in helicopters. He had most of his investments in Atlantic City, and he would do his work in New York City, and he would hop on his chopper and go down. And he nearly went down in a helicopter. Famously, they had a helicopter accident, but thankfully he's okay. Obviously, survived it. So he knows the dangers of helicopters. Doesn't take it for granted. Then he spends his whole life on private jets. He had his own airline itself. And if you, I've been on his jet before he was president, before he was a politician. Guy knows how to work this thing. Spends times in the cockpit, makes purchases, buys things, sells them. Air Force One designs him. So, yeah, he's not a pilot, and he's not an aviation expert. But he's got 50 years of practical experience, and he says, I don't know why these guys are on the same level, and I don't know why the Black Hawk did not see the plane. So many people would never speculate on an accident before it concluded. I'm not going to make any conclusions. That's the president's style. He says, I've seen enough. I've gotten enough. That's where he sees it. And he also thinks DEI played a role. I'm not sure it did. But I just don't know any details about it. I've been on the air for 3 hours looking at the testimony as they're having Tulsi Gabbard as well as Kash Patel. Very compelling. RFK shortly will start too. And then you're following this investigation on top of all that. Philip, you're listening on WDBO. Hey, Philip.
Hey, Brian. Hardest working man in media. Thanks for taking my call.
So much going on. What's on your mind?
Everybody's talking about, you know, the Trump and him cutting spending, which is awesome. We really appreciate that. But one thing that concerned me is the automatic increase that the government gets every year. And if they don't tackle that, I don't see it ever really getting under control. And I believe it takes a 60 Senate threshold in order to get that bill repealed that's been around for like 30 or 40 years. And if they can't stop that, then even if we cut now, it'll be back up in, you know, 10 or 20 years because it'll keep increasing every year automatically.
So are you, Philip, are you talking about the whole thing? We were talking about this yesterday. So let's say Philip in Orlando has a budget and it's $10 million and you've only spent $6 million. And here we are coming up to the end of the fiscal year. You'll find a way to spend that money so you can ask for it again next year. So we got to break that formula, don't we?
We got to break the increase they automatically get. And, of course, not spending it if you don't need it.
Yeah, that would be great. Maybe there'd be incentive to do that. I encourage you to read the Washington Post today on the Elon Musk story. They want to make it that Elon didn't inform the White House what Doge was doing. That's not the story. Just read it. And how he's putting his guys, and women too, on HR and other expertise on efficiency, and he's putting them into the government. And do you know that whole thing that he just did, offering a buyout just to stop working? You don't want to come back to work. Well, just leave, resign. And if you do want, and if you don't mind resigning, you can work for another 6 months. We'll pay you, but you're done. He wants them off the payroll. He thinks government is way too fat. He's already found a way to email this offer to everybody that's never been done before. 2.3 million people, his guys put everybody onto one email address and hit him. How he did that, I don't know, but he did it. Not many people thought that was possible. Then he goes into the U.S. Digital Services, and he says, keep in mind, the guy owns Twitter, the guy owns SpaceX, he owns Tesla. He's got the finest communications, human resources. Doesn't mind firing people, keeps everything lean. He's not a rich guy that likes people around that aren't busy. They got to show why they're producing. You know, in his book that Walter Isaacson, who was our guest earlier, says that he'll walk into Tesla to a division and he'll give everybody 5 minutes with him. And some of that time is justifying what they're doing. And if they can't, they're gone. And if they do, they get raises. So he wants to be impressed. He doesn't know everything, but he hires experts and he can see he's got a good BS monitor. So he's that intelligent. So now he's sitting down with U.S. Digital Services, which is now called U.S. Doge, and he's having his tech guys meet with them to find out what they do and how they're doing it. Fundamentally, it's not to gut them or fire them or make them feel bad, but it's to see how competent they are and see how they can improve. Now, you would think, well, what is that? It's a little arrogant. When you read what he's done, when you understand the businesses he's had, how close he came to bankruptcy thoroughly, I think it was in 2008, bailed out by a few friends, learned from it, grew from it while taking tremendous risks. He's sleeping in the Eisenhower building. That's exactly what he did at Tesla and Twitter. And he turns things around. He guts it. He shows you could do more with less. And he finds a way to lean things out and make them more efficient. I'm excited. His goal is to cut $2 trillion from the government. I don't know anybody else who could set that goal that might have a shot at doing it. And until you really fully understand who he is, you don't understand what he's capable of. He's not just bright. He's got this sense of economy, of being proficient in how he spends. So the President of the United States is speaking right now. And I tell you, Gabbard is selling herself over to Democrats, where a party that she used to be in at. So she wants to be director of national intelligence. What is her liabilities? They said she really hasn't done things like this, and some of her stance that blames NATO in certain degrees, not so black and white, but I'll just summarize it. She says that NATO expanding into Russia's doorstep has made them belligerent. She also said that Assad didn't really gas a lot of these people that we know they did, and Trump responded with. And when he visited Assad, she turned off a lot of people in her party. Now she switched parties. Here's her sparring with Senator Warner a little while ago on her support of Eric Snowden.
I salute your service to our country, but I have serious doubts about your judgment. You consistently praise the actions of Edward Snowden, some who, I believe, jeopardized the security of our nation.
Once again, Senator, Edward Snowden broke the law. He also released information
that
exposed the United States government's illegal
programs. Your legislation and your words are still your beliefs. Yes or no, please.
I'm making myself very clear. Edward Snowden broke the law.
So that's going to be the area they look to explore. But Edward Snowden, she's going to say, release the fact that the government was spying on us. To a degree. Yeah, the FBI was a little bit out of control, but there are whistleblower channels to go through. And many people might say, well, the whistleblowers paid a price. Well, I'll tell you what, those IRS agents now have a new administration that have got their back, that stepped up and talked about how they were giving special rules to Hunter Biden, and they came forward and they had it, and they're fed up with it, and they've never seen anything like it. And it's not easy being a whistleblower by definition. Institutions don't like it, but there's a back channel for it. That's what Snowden should have done. And I have no interest in Edward Snowden. He went to Hong Kong, and now he lives in Russia. That's the choice he made. He seems like a self-important guy who I have no interest in. Intelligent, but good luck. You know, you have Vladimir Putin decide where you're going to live. Well, a lot of people out there don't agree with me, especially on the right. They think he's a hero. I'm curious to see what Tulsi thinks, but when she gets there as DNI, it's not going to be her decision whether Edward Snowden gets back into America. Brian Kilmeade Show. Go to briankilmeade.com. Find out how to see me in Jacksonville and St. Louis in person.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, The Menendez Brothers, Monsters or Misunderstood.
We have evolved to understanding that this kind of stuff can happen.
Judge Jeanine Pirro and a panel of experts break down the Menendez Brothers' new fight for freedom, and their defense attorney explains why he's optimistic he can clear their names.
Are these convicted killers monsters or just misunderstood?
Listen and follow at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.